At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We're back for part two of our discussion of the defense from this wild card win over the Steelers. Great win. Just a savory Ravens win. It's one of these games. I watch the defense and I'm scoring that. And then we just watch the offensive line. And I can't help but want to watch the plays as we're fast forwarding through the video that were great for the other side of the ball. It takes longer than normal to analyze such a game because of the desire to just enjoy every little piece of it. But what did this game mean to you, Jake?
I mean, huge. Anytime that you get to watch a home playoff game against your division rival, and obviously Cincinnati's been, you know, as pretty much as much of a rival over the past couple years, Pittsburgh still, you know, in my heart, the biggest rival for the Ravens. And, you know, we lost to them earlier this year. We knew that in the back of your mind, it was possible that the Ravens would lay an egg. But, you know, this is just a stronger Baltimore team going against an inferior Pittsburgh team. And I was glad that the whole world got to see that. And glad that Baltimore did their thing and they're moving on to the divisional round against Buffalo.
They were prepared to play this game. And that first half was, it's right up there with the most dominant halves of playoff football the Ravens have ever played. And I came up with three or four O-lines, and maybe you'd like to rank these just to start this episode off. But the other ones I came up with were somebody else actually came up with the 2012 AFC Championship. That was you?
That is a good one. Yeah, the 2012 AFC Championship.
Second half against it. Yep. The 2009 AFC Wild Card game, the first half when they went up 24-0 on the Patriots in Foxborough. Mm-hmm. Then there's the 2000 Super Bowl in the second half. You could make the case for either half, honestly, of that game. They led 10-0 at the half and they really dominated, and they only allowed the Giants to run three plays in their territory. But the second half, they also won 24-7, and their only score was on a kickoff return. So I'm comfortable with either half being included in that. And then you have this game here, Pitt wild card game in the first half. And I think there's one more, but I'm trying to remember which it was.
I mentioned the first half of the 2012 Super Bowl. That was pretty good. But
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. So where does this rank among those five? You don't have to rank them 1 to 5, but where does it rank among those five?
I mean, in a vacuum, it's pretty high. I'd say 3 or 4 in a vacuum. It just being a wild card game and the opponent not being as strong, I would say it's closer to 5.
Okay. I've often done these things where I look at the most dominant games the Ravens ever played, and I keep coming back to there's really nothing that's above that Super Bowl 35 game. It's just a utter and complete domination of a high quality opponent. You just don't get that very often to see that. So, and that really was, since you can take either half from that game, you pretty much know that has to be number one on the list a lot of times. But this was really special. And to me, a lot of the other things about it were that the rivalry with Pittsburgh in particular has been so horrific for Baltimore over the years. I watched my Orioles lose twice in game 7 at home to the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, the Colts of the Jones era lost 2 playoff games to Pittsburgh. The more recent Ravens teams had only one win in four games, and they didn't even beat them until 2014 after many years. This was the first home game against the Steelers in the playoffs after all these years. You know, that we could have one of the five games. The one was the first of five games to be played at home. Just crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Talk about some individual players. And why don't you start us off? Who would you like to talk about?
You know, I mentioned him earlier, but Broderick Washington, I thought, had a really solid game. What he was able to do in the run game, you know, multiple times, I think he was kind of going up against Darnell Washington or the left tackle in there. You know, Brody was kind of playing more of a true, you know, outside end and getting after it. I thought he did a great job of shedding blocks, especially on those run plays where the back was getting in near him. And, you know, he did a good job there. I liked the fact that he deflected a pass, or maybe it was Matabike, and I'm confused.
That was Matabike, yeah.
That was Matabike, yeah, later in the game. But, yeah, I thought Brody played pretty well, and he's definitely a player that most Ravens fans don't talk about, you know, pretty much ever. So
yeah. That's fair. I mean, it's really, he's been one of those guys that I think people have wondered about his contract and whatnot, but this was a good game for him. I thought it's a really important game, and it's a really important stretch for the defensive line to play well as a unit. He got very fast pressure on a screen pass is the play I'll remember him for from this game. And then they got that pass out, and that might've ended up being the 21 yard play to Harris. I'm not 100% sure.
He did. That was it. Yep.
That was the play. Look at my sheet here real quick.
Let's see. I'm guessing that was the second
half. Yep, pressure by 96 on that play. That's the one. Bummer. Okay, so it didn't work out as well as could be hoped, but I thought he did actually force Wilson to throw a ball a little bit quicker than he would have liked to in that case. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult to judge pressure on a screen pass because the linemen are trying to give up and trying to get in position to make their block. And the Steelers did a good job with that in this case, but it was also a case where the Ravens missed some tackles on that play and could have had him down a little quicker.
Yeah, another one of his plays, we don't have to go too far into him, but to start the second half, once Pittsburgh had the ball, he held the point of attack and Roquan slides inside for the tackle. I think it was on Najee Harris. It was a real good, you know, no gain or maybe a 1 yard gain for the running back, but Washington really kind of made that play a lot easier for Roquan there.
Yeah, very good. I have that here too. So he came in, he assisted. Roquan crashed that, but he definitely had created space there and then assisted on the tackle. Good play. Yeah, that's a good catch on that one. I'm going to go to another player now. I want to talk about Ardarius Washington, who's having a great year. I mean, talk about a guy having a great year at the right time. He should get paid this offseason, I think, by the Ravens. He should get an extension. It makes all kinds of sense. He's actually been in the league, I think, 1 year longer because he lost a year of service time due to being on practice squad. And thank goodness the Ravens didn't lose him during that time. But he's had an unbelievable impact on the Ravens defense these last 8 weeks or so. It's been a combination of things, but I questioned whether or not he'd be able to have the size and the physicality on the back end to make tackles. And that hasn't been a problem at all. I mean, he's been coming up against much bigger men, a lot of tight ends and whatnot. I'm trying to remember Ferguson.
Fryermuth.
The guy I'm thinking of. Well, he's Fryermuth too, but Ferguson in a previous game. Who are some of the other players? He said interactions with big tight ends, and he's been covering them or he's been hitting them, and it's been effective at both. He had some missed tackles to start out on the back end, and I was kind of considering the problem unresolved, but the last four games he's only had one total missed tackle by PFF standards, which is a pretty tough grading scale, by the way. They have a lot of missed tackles, and I thought you know, he's just delivered hit after hit when needed. He's never seemed like he's too small on the field, including Calvin Austin is one of the few guys he's picking a fight with a guy his own size, but he destroyed Calvin Austin. I can't believe he stood up to that hit.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty crazy that Austin still held on to that ball. But yeah, I mean, our Darius has been awesome. I've been a fan of his, you know, since the Ravens were, you know, picking him up as a UDFA. Everybody that kind of followed the draft knew that he was highly touted, definitely a prospect that, you know, could have or should have been drafted, and Baltimore was really lucky to add him as a priority free agent. And it's really cool to see how this season has unfolded for him and for the Ravens. And I agree with you. I think it makes all the sense in the world to extend him. He's probably not going to be overly expensive, but you know, the better he plays down the stretch, it's probably going to add some money to his deal. But you know, based on this season, I think Marcus is going to be going out the door.
Yeah,
obviously you're going to pay Hamilton, but I think you have enough money in the budget to keep our Darius around.
Right. I almost don't think you can afford to let him go. Now they can, there are other safeties you can get who might fill the Ravens' need, but the free safety skill set is very hard to find. And Washington has proven to be quite good in this game. That so much to talk about, but he had two stops of Freiermuth that were, you know, one is 2 yards short. And by the way, if you didn't remember that play from against the Texans he made to knock Mixon out at the 1 yard line, the play against Freiermuth looked the same thing. He had two missed tackles right before it. Then all of a sudden he makes the knockout blow against him. Very, very similar kind of looking plays. And both of them, he stopped them, you know, 2 yards short and inches short. And they each led to cowardly punt situations. They were tremendously important plays. And then he had a third drive ending play when he dropped the interception in the end zone. And no matter what he might say in a revisionist manner after the fact, well, we didn't really want it. We wanted the ball to 45 yards. He wanted that football.
Yeah, he was trying to get the interception, even though it was better that he didn't get it.
It's very good. But it was good safety instincts, definitely scissoring together at the points that ended up being basically triple coverage. Humphrey was in trail coverage. Hamilton was back there bracketing, and then they had a good slide over from Ardarius to get in front of the entire play and nearly pick it off. But what a game for Ardarius. It wasn't like he was without problems. He was the one who effectively missed the tackle. He and Wiggins both missed the tackle on the 36-yard pass down the right sideline. But so it wasn't like it was without any flaws or anything, but another really fine game from Ardarius and something that's going to, I think, create some financial security for him at the end of this year.
Oh, for sure. And on that particular play with Wiggins, I think Ardarius was just a hair short. He was going for the ball. Yeah. And Wiggins, he was just too far behind in trail coverage. I'm going to say Pickens kind of ran an out and up. You know, essentially it's a nine route, but he runs an out first. They ran the same play on the other sideline earlier in the game. And Wiggins, he has the athleticism, but I don't understood spatially where Pickens was, because there was just too much of a gap in space that Pickens had on him for him to catch up and make a play on him at that point. And, you know, if you go back and watch it, you know, a couple times, I think you'll see the same thing. It's Wiggins just, you know, he lets Pickens get a little bit of space on him. Pickens is a great guy at pushing off. I don't know if that really impacted this particular play. But there was just too much space, a really good ball by Wilson, and Ardarius was just a hair slow on trying to attack the ball. And, you know,
it is what it is. And then they both, after he adjusted, stepped inside, kind of Torrey Smith, 2000, the Mile High Miracle game. I'm thinking about the end of the first half touchdown where he kind of, you know, makes that subtle move to the inside to take the ball and then takes it in. It looked just like that from Pickens. And unfortunately, neither of them was in position at that point. Ardarius was going for the ball. As you mentioned, he flew right by the play, and Wiggins didn't catch up to it, in part because there was an intersection with Ardarius Washington flying through that he probably didn't want to take a hit from. But a bummer of a situation. Who else do you want to talk about?
I think my second guy I'd like to talk about is Adafe Owe. I was talking about some of the pressures and sacks Madubuike had earlier, and just the pursuit and freaky athleticism he has. Owe is like the prototype for this. The only difference is he's listed as an edge rusher, a little bit different size and shape, but what he was able to do in this game, containing Wilson, running, pushing him out of bounds on those plays that he escaped, that was huge. I think he got a number of pressures, and he was involved. I think as the season's gone on, he's starting to build more confidence, and it's just really, really good to see what he's kind of become. Like the ability for him to compress a pocket, say he's on playing the left outside linebacker position and he's going against the right tackle and the out to the offensive right, he does this really good spin move where he's like pushing off of the tackle. He spins off of him and then will continue to pursue and make a play, either by getting a guy out of bounds or making a tackle or contributing to one. That I'm really surprised. That athleticism is really special. And I think his football IQ is definitely growing.
Chuck Smith definitely showing on Owe. In this game, he used Broderick Jones kind of like a sock puppet, and Broderick Jones is not the best player in the world, so it's a good matchup for Owe, but he beat him inside with a spin move for a quarterback hit, and Wilson had to overthrow Pickens by a long way out of bounds. And then the second time, and this was I think the very next play, he dipped past Jones to the outside for sack minus seven. So he kind of took over the game there on what was the final Steelers drive. Leading up to the end of it, where they had to go for it on 4th and 15 there. But the other thing, there's one other play from the early in the game I want to make sure we hit on. You mentioned the time where he ran down Wilson scrambling the pocket. That's good containment. You want to see that. But he was on the left edge of a game of the offensive left side, I should say. And Madubuike was chasing down Wilson as he rolled left from the pocket, and Owe had the presence of mind to drop and cover the tight end. I think it was, might have been a wide receiver, in fact. Van Jefferson, that's who it was, as he rolled left, and that denied Wilson any outlet for the throw. It was like he was would have gone by rule to that sideline and found a way to catch the football, but Owe denied it and Wilson had to throw the ball away. Fantastic. You don't see a lot of outside linebackers who are aware enough to know to drop the coverage under that circumstance and not be baited into going after Wilson and creating a play for him.
Yeah, completely agree. That play you mentioned, I guess I didn't write down that note, but I do vividly remember that play where you almost think Owe has, just a touch more speed and he would be the guy to back there. But his presence of mind to, kind of layer that speed to the sideline and, actually cover there prevented Wilson from being able to thread one, past those two defenders, past him and Madubuike. So that was good.
Yeah, really special. So let's see. You brought up Owe, right? So it's my turn.
Yep.
Let's talk about Marlon Humphrey. One of the things we've seen a lot from Humphrey this year, and he really seems to be loving it, is success as a pass rusher. And we got two more good ones. He had two pass rush events for the Ravens. The first one is a pressure where he actually hit the arm of Wilson, and that was the triggering pressure. That was the initial pressure, which forced Wilson then to pull the ball back down. He stepped up in the pocket and Michael Pierce engulfed him, like Jabba the Hutt or something, in terms of taking him down. It was quite a move, but it was really triggered by Humphrey getting around the edge there. And I think it might've been Warren again in the backfield who attempted to block him. And then it was Warren. And he still was able to get by him and get a little piece of Wilson that forced the play to happen. And beyond that, there's much more I could talk about him as a coverage player, because he had a lot of good coverage plays in this game. But the other one, he had a quarterback hit himself on Fields, where he also forced the throwaway. So one of two or three plays that Fields played in that game.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the one that I mentioned earlier that wasn't a true ATS, or I guess it was an ATS situation for Wilson, and I thought that Humphrey got pressure was when Wilson was backed up into the end zone and he completed that deep pass to Calvin Austin. But yeah, his ability as a blitzer is, you know, top tier. I definitely, you know, top two, top three on the Ravens, you know, outside of their best pass rushers. And honestly, he's probably up there in the NFL too, as far as a secondary player being able to do what he does. I think he's really kind of stepped up his game. Humphrey, in my opinion, has had like a little bit of a roller coaster career. You know, the level that he plays in a down year is not like so bad, but he definitely has like really ups and some downs. And last year wasn't his strongest year, and he's really come back this year and you know, put it all together. He's an all pro again. The way he can play the slot, you know, the nickel cornerback position, and you know, alternate, he can cover guys man on man, and you know, just take away their top receiving option, is just special. I am very impressed with Humphrey and what he did in this game, even though, you know, he allowed a couple things here and there. You know, I feel pretty good about him.
You know, at the beginning of this year, I was feeling a lot the way you did in terms of he certainly had big years in the past, a big year with the 8 forced fumbles. And, you know, this year has been a big interception year, and been, you know, I think he's so clearly demonstrated this year that he has both the physicality and the instincts to be a great safety in this league, that I think I have much less fear about signing him to a long-term extension at this point. He's still 2 years more under contract, but the Ravens also have to be thinking about how they can extend his contract to kind of reduce the cap hits on the back end of this current deal. And so they might really try and do that with the understanding that he's moving to safety at some point on this next deal. Whether that's, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now. I mean, honestly, depending on need, it could be 2025 and he moves to safety. He's already basically not as often an outside corner as he has been in the past, even though he can still do that stuff. It's like Hamilton. He's more valuable the closer you can get him to being the football, the more you can get him to playing his instincts on the football. And where we've seen safety instincts from him a lot has been in the ability to come off his own man in coverage and make a play on the ball. That's safety stuff. That's what a safety does.
Yeah. He's been extremely good at that this year in particular. And you know, I think the best offenses in the league try to get the ball to their best playmakers. And the easiest way for them to do that is to move around those receivers, put them in the slot where they can normally get an advantageous matchup.
Yep.
And the Ravens can counteract that with Kyle Hamilton and Marlon Humphrey. And I think Humphrey's done a phenomenal job of that this year, whenever you're in those man coverage situations. And I agree. I think he could move to safety. It definitely could create a little bit of a logjam if, you know, you re-sign Ardarius Washington, you re-sign Kyle Hamilton, then you got three safeties. Not a terrible thing, not at all. And injuries do happen, so I'm all for it.
If injuries do happen, Hamilton can play a lot of other places because he can.
Right.
If you lose, Marlon Humphrey from the slot, or if you want to alternate between the two of them, they do bring different things to the line of scrimmage. I don't think it's necessarily a terrible thing to have Marlon on the back end with his ball skills and Hamilton up at the line of scrimmage with his pass rush and tackling skills, which, as great as Humphrey is, he's just a cut above him on either of those elements, as good as Humphrey's been as a pass rusher this year. And then on the back end, I'm not sure you wouldn't even get more ball skills with Humphrey, but I'd be fine in just alternating and saying, you know, for years I've been listening to bullshit from defensive coordinators who say, you know what, we've got three versatile safeties. Any of them can play free safety, strong safety, whatever. And what it usually means is they've got three strong safeties. They don't have anybody who can really play the back end. Well, the Ravens did really have Hamilton and a Washington and Humphrey, who they all really felt like had the instincts to play on the back end, whether that means single high or in a split role, that they would really have something special in terms of the ability to rotate those guys up the line of scrimmage, particularly if you don't know where people are going. I mean, yeah. It's almost like the unfair advantage the Ravens had when they had Judon and Bowser together at outside linebacker and all the flexibility that gave the pass rush. I would love it. I would absolutely love it if they would have a non-specific position even for Humphrey in 25 would be a very exciting change, I think, for this defense.
I agree completely.
I got one more point to make about Humphrey in this game, because I thought this was just a great game and it reminded me of a play last year that was one of my favorite. Q3 446. Go back and look at it if you want. It's not a good result for the Ravens, because it's the play where Harris got the PR 21. It was minus 6 plus 27 after the catch. That went up by the right sideline. But Humphrey came as a pass rusher on that play. He got pancaked on mm-hmm. the play. But all of a sudden, it's taking forever to get Harris to the ground. And Humphrey got up from the backfield, chased down the play, and made the tackle. Just unbelievable. The play it reminded me of was last year when Hamilton got chop blocked in the backfield, drew a 15-yard penalty, had a lineman on top of him, got up, and then made an interception on the play.
Yep, against the 49ers. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that is a great point about that play. It was a frustrating play to watch with Harris looking as fast as he's ever looked. I don't think it even went for too many yards, like maybe 15 or so yards. It felt like 35 yards because of how long he was running. But, for Marlon to get pancaked and get back up and make the tackle or be part of making that tackle, which was kind of a committee effort. It shows what kind of effort and value Humphrey brings to the defense.
All right. Let's see. I said Humphrey. Anybody else you want to talk about here?
Yeah, we can talk about Wiggins a little bit. Nate Wiggins has been a really, really good draft pick. First round corner, has, you know, not played every snap by any means, but anytime that he's on the field and he's, you know, covering somebody at this point, I don't worry about him. I'm looking over towards Stevens. I'm looking over towards Tre'Davious White. I'm looking towards the linebackers of Malik Harrison's in there. Who are they going to attack? It's not going to be Nate Wiggins. Obviously, that one touchdown happens against Wiggins and Ardarius, but it's hard to find many faults in his game. And for being such a lanky, you know, kind of thin guy out there, the way he attacks screens in the running game is really special. And I think his body is starting to hold up a little bit better to that. In the preseason, he got banged up from one of those type plays. But I'm very impressed with the stickiness in coverage and his toughness and grit out there to really attack the ball or the ball carrier.
Yeah, he certainly is having a great rookie year, and he's far ahead of where you might reasonably hope that a player would be at this point. I'm kind of thinking back to Marlon Humphrey's rookie year and how much he played. If I recall correctly, Humphrey's a rookie in 17, and it was in 18 that he finally became like a regular player. Even then, he was kind of rotating. Mm-hmm. But in his rookie year, he played maybe half the snaps. I'd have to actually look back and confirm on this, but he's, you know, Wiggins is, he's right on the Humphrey track of getting there. And if you look back at the Ravens corners in their history that they drafted in the first round, Dwayne Starks did have an interception in his first game with the Steelers, but he, against the Steelers, but he didn't play right away on all downs. He was like playing on a lot on third down. He was playing on more, you know, higher chances of passing downs. Chris McAllister also got an interception in his very first game, but he was actually the third cornerback on a team where Starks and Jenkins were the top two guys in 1999, as ridiculous as that sounds right now, by the way.
Yeah.
And then of course in 2000, it's all McAllister and Starks, and they were a very dominant duo. But it doesn't happen for corners right away, is the point, is that they, you know, usually have to wait a year. I'm a little more concerned about how much progress TJ Tampa has made this year. I'm still hoping it's to come. If I had to have my choice between Ardarius Washington taking a step forward this year and Tampa, definitely take Tampa because he's a first year player and Washington's a third year player. Mm-hmm. But I think now with the IR move for, JAD, he can't come back, I don't believe, or if he can, it'd be for the Super Bowl or something. So it's not likely to happen at the most generous possible way to term that. So now it's a real possibility that Tampa will see some playing time down the stretch. Somebody might get hurt. Tre'Davious White might not play well, and they might need another guy for the dime. So they might go to him. But the Ravens are actually pretty thin at corner right now. And Tampa's important on special teams, and he's important on as potentially being the next man up on the cornerback totem.
Yeah, I think he has made some pretty good special teams plays, and I agree with you. If we were able to see, you know, some real progression from him this year, it would be you know, really encouraging for 2025 and going forward. But you know, as far as right now, I'm pretty pleased with the unit. Stevens still worries me in any given game. And Tre'Davious White hasn't been great either, but as long as you only have, you know, some average or slightly below average play from two guys, I think this can kind of rally around and, you know, kind of scheme things to make it difficult on those players.
Let's go back to Stevens for a second, because he's an interesting one. I think he's actually played pretty well when he's been put in that weak side linebacker spot in the dime, you know, playing a true dime back role. He seems to be much more facile in that role. And it's not, it's usually not a straight up man role. So it's not one where he has to always be sticky. If he does have to be sticky, it's often with a tight end. He's a kind of a better size matchup at his relative size and speed combination for that. And he's just also seemed to deal with underneath zone concepts pretty well. Doesn't drop to the back end very often in that. So he may have a running back that he's responsible for, but it's usually on third down, his responsibility on those plays is often to make a short downhill play short of the sticks on like a third and seven, where he holds him to 4 yards or 5 yards.
Right.
I think he's been very good in that role. And I'm a little surprised actually, because it's not the Ravens' way to go with a smaller guy, even a cornerback period, let's say, in that dimeback role. I'm not saying they've never done it. Anthony Levine was a safety, but he was a little bit on the smaller side. There have been guys they've tried in there that have been a little bit smaller at dime, but it's a little unusual that Stevens is the guy, and he's more of a, I think of him more now as a hybrid corner safety than as a pure right cornerback, which is, you know, 90% of his 94% probably of his snaps the last 2 years have been at right corner, but he certainly is. He's proven to me that he can play that slot role. And I would think a lot of those skills would also serve him very well on the back end. So I hope there's a willingness to move him to safety if it's really needed, even as early as sometime the rest of this postseason.
Yeah, I agree with that. And my critique of Steve is not him in the role that you're talking about. It's him, you know, as a man corner on that right side of the defense. I think he looks a lot better. There was a play, like you're mentioning, where his responsibility is just to come up and tackle on a third and long. He did that against Freiermuth. It was him and I think maybe Roquan was the second man to the ball on a third and really long. It was like third and 15 or so, third and 17. I don't remember exactly, but he made a nice tackle. It wasn't a wrap-up tackle, so I do have a little bit of critique on that. He's really just wanting to put the shoulder into guys and maybe force a ball out, maybe just give him a good hit. But getting to the ball, slowing down the receiver, and having other guys help gang tackle is still a good job by him.
All right. Outstanding stuff. I've got one more guy I want to talk about, if that's okay. Nnamdi Matabike. Let's just quickly go over. We talked about him a little earlier as being like just too much as a three tech for a lot of guards. Siamalo was the guy who got a lot of him in this game. Bowled a couple times, once for pressure, another time as a not to just basically bowled Siamalo right back into the cone, got his hand up and immediately knocked down the pass. He and Owe each kind of like alternately took over the game because it's Q3 113. He knocked down the pass, and then at Q3 023 on third and eight, I think it might have been two plays later, he chased down Wilson for the sack minus eight off that initial pressure from Van Noy that you mentioned that forced the punt. That I still can't get over the speed at which he did this, the quickness at which he was off. I think Siamalo on that play too. Might have been the left tackle. Their backup left tackle is in number 67. I didn't get his name. So Dan Moore left the game, but 67 was in there. Let me get his name while I'm here. It's Calvin Anderson was out there. Been in the league a few years, but I don't think he's played a whole lot in the league so far. But anyway, he got right off him like it was nothing and ran him down. He had two of the Ravens of four sacks. The Ravens now have all 18 games this year, they've had two plus sacks. What have we heard all year about the Ravens pass rush? Not good enough, right?
Yeah, pretty bad. Yeah.
And they're second in the league in sacks. Oh boy, did they need to get Max Crosby because he was everything the Ravens.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Is needed at the trade deadline. Thank God that the EDC does not listen to the Ravens, the fan base in general. And he's a guy who's going to make his own decisions no matter what, even if he did listen.
Yeah. I would say Max Crosby is a special player and it'd be awesome to have him on this playoff run, but certainly you don't want to mortgage the future just because of the present. And clearly the Ravens didn't need him in the sense that they weren't getting to the quarterback. I mean, second in the league in sacks speaks volumes. They have talent. They signed Matabike. They have Kyle Van Noy that, has 12 and a half sacks on the year. Their OA, has developed and he has 10 sacks. Well, now 11, if you include the postseason. So yeah, I mean, pretty good group that has, been able to kind of rack up some stats without maybe putting as much pressure on the quarterback as they did last year.
54 sacks though this year. It's the third most in Ravens history. And we don't think of this team as being like the 2014 team. They had two less sacks. Think of this team as being like the 2006 team that had 60 sacks. I guess it's the fourth highest total in because it's 2023, 61, I think, and then 2006, 60, And then that was in a 16-game season too, so that was really good. And then 2014, right, they had, I think, 56. So this is the fourth highest. There aren't very many Ravens fans who know that that's the case. I just don't think there are that many people who, you know, we've been through all these seasons with 35 sacks, you know, 39 sacks, that sort of thing. And you wonder, you know, what's going on. Even the 2000 year, they didn't have a whole bunch of sacks. I want to say they had in the 30s still, but they sure had a whole hell of a lot of turnovers. That was true.
Yeah. All right. The thing this year that I felt has been lacking a little bit is the turnover department, but you know, beggars can't be choosers, I guess.
There you go. 35 sacks for the 2000 Ravens were 22nd in the National Football League. So you don't have to do it with sacks anyway. All right. Well, why don't we take a few questions from the mailbag? I know we got a couple good ones out there. And Jake, while we do that, can you come up with your 3-2-1 MVP list? And then we'll run down that before we close it out here.
Yes. So my three is Washington.
Just be ready. Just be ready to do it. We'll do it at the end after we do the mailbag, if that's okay.
Okay. Sure.
But your three is Broderick Washington. It's already been given away. Now, for gambling purposes, if you want to get a bet on Jake's number three guy being Broderick Washington, now would be the time.
I should change it to Broderick Jones on the Steelers.
Yes, because yes, he was a benefit to the defense, yeah, that's for sure. By the way, just speaking along those lines, a lot has been made now of the MVP voting that's going on. Isn't there something wrong? Maybe I don't want to lead the witness, but is there something wrong with having betting on something that's already been decided like that, that some group of people collectively understand what the answer is?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it just, they didn't stop. I mean, one book didn't stop taking bets until the All Pro team was announced. Right. And they still had a very lopsided Pro Allen line. So you could have gotten, 3.2 to 1, I believe, on Lamar. So if you wanted to get $100,000 down on Lamar, well, you can always pretend you would have borrowed even more than that, or whatever, but mortgage your house to do it or whatever. But the truth of the matter is, there's a limit to how big a bet they'll take, or how big a bet they'll take from you ever in the future if you got one of these right.
Yeah.
But it's it would have been a great opportunity, because it's information that's known, and I'm just shocked that we're doing that. And it kind of feels wrong to me that there would be betting on this. Like, it's like betting on a fact that's already in an encyclopedia, and your counterparty could have already looked it up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's pretty bizarre. You know, the people, the voters, I'm not sure the legality that's out there for them to vote, to bet on this award, or bet on sports in general. I don't think that there's many rules against it for a lot of those people, but there's information out there, and yeah, it's pretty wild.
All right.
Did you have the list?
I have my list of three guys, but I have some questions here on Film Study Mailbag that we want to go through first. So first question is from Zach Serpa Weinberg, who says, who do we have to bribe to get the Ravens a playoff game with a positive turnover differential? It has never happened in the Lamar era. Didn't know that, by the way. Thanks, Zach. AD's intentional drop worked out fine this week. And they've got intentional. He's got basically cough marks around, or air quotes. But just once, it would be nice to get some short fields in the playoffs. Great point, Zach. And the Ravens have not had short fields the entire year. Did you happen to see the it was like a graphic that had the touchdown drive lengths? Go ahead, tell us about it.
I don't have it in front of me, but I did know what you were talking about as you were mentioning it. It was, another piece of the MVP conversation between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And, how their defenses have contributed to their success this year. Basically, without me looking at that particular graph, it was, very much showing that Lamar Jackson has had many fewer short yardage situations than Josh Allen for, you know, offensive touchdown drives and or just opportunities in general. That's all.
Yeah, it's if you it was ordered from longest to shortest in terms of drives. So, and the number of touchdowns was very close. It was like 58 and 59. So it was nice to have ordered data where it's almost exactly the same number of total data points. But first of all, the Ravens have 10 long drives of 90 plus yards. They added two more in this playoff game. No other team in the NFL had more than five in the season of 90 plus yards. And no other team, I think, since 2000 had had 10 either. So this was the most. What was I going to say about this? Oh, yeah. And if you look at this, you see that in the beginning, there's this big hump where Jackson has much longer drives at the earliest numbers, or the earliest numbers of the order, where, you know, Allen's longest might have been, had a couple over 90, maybe as many as five. But then he had a bunch that were like 80 and trailing down to 70 by the time you're at Jackson's last 90. Then they both have a whole bunch of 70s together because, yeah, you start on the 30-yard line a lot under the current rules. And then you go to the shorter fields, and Jackson has almost none of them. And Allen has a bunch of fields that were, you know, short fields and getting set up. And unfortunately, the Ravens defense in 24 has not been about turnovers. It's really been about getting the other team off the field by punting and leaving it up to your secondary to make it difficult for opposing quarterbacks to complete important high leverage passes, but not necessarily to intercept them. And right. To me, that's very frustrating watching Ravens football from the past.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Something I mentioned earlier is that we haven't gotten a lot of turnovers on defense this year. And it's been very frustrating. Thankfully, the offense played a clean game against Pittsburgh in the wild card round. And I think, going forward, that has to be the recipe for success. That should be true in any game. You know, it's just kind of like saying, you know, the team that scores the most points wins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But truly, this Ravens team is good enough that against almost any team, if Baltimore plays a clean game on offense, they have a really good shot at winning the game. Even if Buffalo plays a clean game on offense, I like Baltimore's chances in an even game in that way. Obviously, with turnovers on both sides that could even out the number, there's still layers and levels to what those turnovers mean, the position of the field, all of that. But just a 0-0 game in the turnover differential, I like Baltimore's shot.
Yeah, I do too. And that's the Phil Hellmuth logic. He's always, you know, being a obnoxious baby whenever he loses, of course, but he says, if I just have average luck, you know, I'd win every tournament kind of thing. Or even just slightly below average luck, I'd be fine. But I can't have terrible luck. And that's what's happening here. I can't stand watching him. I know people love to watch him lose in these live poker, you know, cash games and whatnot. But I just can't stand watching the guy berate other people in the way he does. Yeah. All right. Let's get to another question here. See what we've got. Let's see. Okay. Angelove 85. What seemed to be the issue with the defense and the explosive plays? It seems as if the same issues from earlier in the season returned. Also, how do we hide Stevens in coverage against Buffalo? All right. So multi-part question. So the first one was, can you diagnose kind of what went wrong that caused a lot of the plays to go wrong in this game? So they had five explosive plays in that second half.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, there were a number of things. I believe it was the Mike Williams sideline catch that went for big gain. There was basically a pick route there that created the separation. That was Trey White actually in coverage, not Stevens, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, anytime that you have a pick route like that, they're rarely called. Refs could throw a flag, but, it's kind of ticky-tack, so most of the time they don't. So it created, you know, leverage and separation right off the jump, and then White – once the ball was caught, he just whiffed on a tackle attempt it wasn't even close. And, you know, Williams was able to get more yards after the catch. Another play, Brandon Stevens, did he get pushed off on? I think he probably was at some point, but I think the
where
one
he went
was,
by the play.
Yeah, when he went by the play, there might have been a push off before he kind of went by. And then, you know, just naturally, Stevens is not the best at getting his head around, getting his eyes back towards the football. So, yeah, he's going to struggle that way. There was a communication error between Stevens and Hamilton. And I think most fans would agree from watching that Hamilton's a little bit more trustworthy. I think we're going to side with Kyle that what he said was correct and that Stevens was supposed to, you know, carry the receiver deep. And then on the right sideline with the Pickens OPI, was that Humphrey? Yeah, that was Humphrey earlier.
Yep.
And thankfully that one was called. So, I mean, that play doesn't even need to be mentioned, but I'm just thinking about some of the big potential plays there. George is an all-time great push-off receiver, and the Ravens are going to get called for stuff or not get the benefit on a lot of those plays.
So you went through all of those in excellent detail. By the way, the rub that got that separated White from Williams was a really big part of that play, and that's is right on the money. It was a combination of factors, though. That rub route, that's going to occasionally happen. I don't even if to the degree it happens, it's okay. It's the underneath coverage guy. It's not a communication problem. The two that were communication problems were Stevens not. I think Stevens not fulfilling his responsibility, because I really believe Hamilton had it right, because he was pissed. He was really pissed after the play on the touchdown pass to Van Jefferson. And the other one was the other touchdown pass that went on the right sideline to Pickens, where Washington was late. And he also kind of ran through he was threatening to run over the railroad, run over Wiggins, which also freed Pickens to get free and get into the end zone. Those were the two real bad ones. The Washington 25-yard play to Calvin Austin, where he came down and laid the big hit on him, no problem at all. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, 8 times out of 10, he's not going to hold on to that ball, and you live with the result even so. It's the zone coverage between level 2 and 3. You deal with that.
Yeah, I agree. And on that play, I think – a number of opponents are not going to have as good pass protection. I think Jaylen Warren is just really good at what he does. And it's going to be tough to find a lot of running backs that can do that good of a job on Marlon Humphrey blitzing like that.
That said, Angelo, you correctly identify a damning consistency of these five plays. These are five big plays given up in the second half when the Ravens knew the big pass was coming. In fact, three of them were on third and five or longer where they absolutely knew it was coming on that play, and they still gave up a big play. So I'm not unconcerned, you know, entering the game against Buffalo. Your second part of the question was how to hide Stevens. I think at this point, the only way they would hide Stevens, or the only way they'd be able to hide Stevens, I guess there's two. Number one would be to play Tre'Davious White more at right corner. But honestly, I'm not sure that he's really a big step up from Stevens. He's probably about as good. He might be better under some matchups, and he might be better in terms of not giving up back shoulder plays. He might also be worse at getting beat deep. I can't say in terms of where it'd be. I mean, Stevens is a pretty sticky corner, even though he's has trouble getting his head on a swivel. But if they really want to address the problem, I think they'd have to move Wiggins over to right corner, they'd have to travel with Wiggins to the number one receiver, let Wiggins take some lumps, and also give him consistent help over the top versus whatever team's Jamar Chase version of Jamar Chase there is. So Buffalo doesn't really have that guy. Amari Cooper, you know, he's an older guy. He is a big bodied. He can back shoulder Stevens. There's no doubt about it. I don't really see him as being that guy. I think that there are other, you know, they have a bunch of middle of the pack receivers that know how to work with Josh Allen and can be effective, but I'm not sure against Buffalo specifically that they ought to be making changes. Now down the line, Mahomes has some weapons. certainly with either Brown or with Worthy. If Rashee Rice were still, you know, available right now, he'd be a guy you'd really wanting to be game planning for. And the Lions certainly have Amon-Ra St. Brown. If they face Sam or somebody, or if they get into the Eagles in the Super Bowl, they have two good receivers that you'd want to make sure you take care of. But, you know, unless they're willing to start doing some traveling, you basically are in a situation where Stevens, the other team knows exactly where he is and can exactly line up to exploit him. So it's kind of a bad combination of circumstances right now. So the Ravens really, that's one of two problems on defense they haven't really addressed. The other being how to deal with the weak side linebacker position.
I agree with that. And I think we already touched on the Stevens thing earlier. When you put him in a different role on third down where he's not forced to be that automatic right corner, I think that kind of hides him, if you want to call it that, or puts him in a more comfortable role where he can, you know, attack downhill, handle, you know, crossing routes in the middle of the field and kind of click and close. I like that role better for him. Some, you know, pseudo safety linebacker type stuff.
Yeah, dive back. Yeah, I think he's been good in that role. And the Ravens have had such success finding players who can move to it. It's one of the most portable safety skills. When you've played on the back end, one comment that I have very frequently about linebackers is that they can't figure out what's going on behind them. They don't know what's going on between level two and three. They don't drop deep enough. They tend to want to defend the line of scrimmage more, contain the quarterback, play really short passes against the running back. That's what they prefer to do, but they're not good at dropping deep enough to really make it difficult for the quarterback to throw a ball down the seam and drag a route that would create a tighter window for that quarterback, or maybe even force him to pull the ball down. And it's a very hard thing for inside linebackers to learn. The guys who have success doing it are often safeties who come up due to lack of speed, lack of ability to play the back end, but they are perfectly useful in a dime situation because they're much better coverage players than linebackers. And that's why you'll often hear me say, your third best safety is usually a much better coverage player than your second best inside linebacker. So that's why I love dime defense in general and making that replacement on an obvious passing down. All right. I got one more good one here I want to get to before we go off. And this is from Baltimore Sports Jam, who said, I noticed that on TV that Harbaugh seemed to have a call sheet and he was talking on the headset after consulting. Is this a new thing? Is it possibly calling some offensive or defensive plays? I don't know that he's actually calling the plays. We noticed it when we were looking at the offensive line tonight, though, that he had a call sheet up and he was covering his mouth and whatnot. So something's going on. But I couldn't tell you exactly what. And I would have guessed it'd be more likely that we'd see this on the defensive side of the ball, that he'd be interacting with Orr, who's more of a greener offensive coordinator, opposed to Monken, who is a grizzled vet by comparison in terms of his offensive coordinator resume.
Yeah, I agree. I noticed it on TV. I don't think that's the first time we've seen it. It's very few and far between. I would definitely agree with that. And I don't think that Harbaugh is necessarily calling a play, but maybe giving some direction on what he wants to do, especially as it comes down to like third down, fourth down decisions. Like third down, we can call this kind of play so that we could potentially go for it on fourth down. That kind of thing is probably what's going on there. I think, you know, the headset's there for both offense and defense. We maybe didn't see it as much with the play call sheet, but, you know, I'm sure he's communicating with Zach Orr and, you know, other defensive assistants during the defense as well.
That's a great point, because Zach Orr, the camera is on him because he's on the sideline. And he's the natural magnet for the camera while the defense is going on. And if you look at defensive coordinators around the league, the booth DCs, sometimes that's true, but it's not always true. Monken is a booth OC. There's very much on, but it's not, I don't think it's everyone. Sometimes they cut there once per game. And sometimes they cut there, like when it's Monken, it seems like six or eight times per game. They're wanting to kind of get his emotional reaction to things. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. The other thing I'd add to yours, and it's a great point about, you know, figuring out on third down and fourth down what their strategy might be. Also in terms of game management, just saying, hey, give me three run plays, get us down to 4 minutes here, and then we can decide what we want to do with this. And I'm perfectly happy, by the way, going on fourth and one, to your point, Addy. Mm-hmm. All of that could be going on at the same time on the offense and not really be stepping on Monken's toes. When they had sound on Harbaugh, one game was in Super Bowl 47. And he was talking to the offensive coordinator a lot about wanting to get his fake field goal play in. You remember that with Tucker?
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, he said, okay, if we don't make it here, I really want to try this fake field goal. And it might have been a fourth and nine play or something. And Tucker was still a rookie. It didn't seem as sacrilegious to take points off the board to try a field goal, but the 49ers sniffed it out, and then they got the ball back after a punt anyway and scored on the Jacoby Jones touchdown at the end of the half. But it was an interesting exchange there that they captured on, I forget if it was America's game or it was just the highlight film from the Super Bowl itself where they mm-hmm. were going through the thing, but it was on one or the other.
Yeah. One of the things I was going to mention right there, when they were cutting to Monken at one point in the game, he did not have a call sheet in front of his face and he was calling a play. And that part kind of bothered me because I don't at any point want the opposing team to be able to understand what he's saying and realize what play call that is. And, you know, the Ravens, if they're watching the broadcast and the All 22, hopefully they have a person for that or people. They can say, okay, Todd, on this play, you may have given this thing up. So in the next game, if you call this play, I'm probably thinking way more about it than anybody ever would, but we're going to change that call or something, or it's going to be slightly different. So there's ways around it, but I'm like, if the broadcast is going to show the coordinator and their mouth speaking, and it's not necessarily the broadcast fault, but they did choose to air it. I don't know. I had a little bit of issue with that, but Monken wasn't covering his mouth. And, you know, there are lip readers out there. There are sign stealers, as as Michigan fans know, Ohio State people, you know.
New England.
But, yeah, it exists. So, you know, that was just a little quirk that I was like, I don't love that. But, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think terminology is going to be different by team, but they probably are things they can pick up words from lip reading that would mean something in terms of what the call is. And I agree. It's probably something where Monken's mouth ought to be covered in the booth automatically, maybe by some sort of pixelization they could do. Mm-hmm. But they haven't figured that part out. And maybe that's coming in the future. We take broadcast quality really seriously in terms of wanting to see real live action sometimes. Yeah. And I'll tell you what really pisses me off is going to the booth for Taylor Swift when there's on play defensive emoting occurring. So Travis mm-hmm. Kelce's just scored a touchdown. My first point of interest is which Raven is pissed off with what other Raven about that play, so I could figure out how that coverage broke down. But then you see Taylor Swift and she's dancing up and down, and I just really give me a fucking break here. It's just, but sometimes they're very serious about it, and sometimes they're not. All right, got one more question here. I'll do this one, then we'll go on. Sure. A Bits says, "How does the defense toe the line versus the Bills in terms of defending the run without leaving themselves weak versus the pass? The Bills seem to have a lot of success running versus the Broncos, and it led to a few big pass plays."
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the Ravens play a decent amount of nickel to start. They may play some heavies, but you know, mixing in Malik Harrison and Chris Board is going to be something I expect from the Ravens, and I think it can work. The problem that you have with Harrison is like we were talking about earlier, him in an off-ball situation where he has to cover a running back is just not good for Baltimore's defense. But having Chris Board out there, even though, you know, we've seen some failures from him in the past on Ravens teams, like against the Chiefs, just like Patrick Queen, and you know, any Ravens linebacker has struggled against running backs in the receiving game. Board is definitely more adept at doing that. So I would expect some nickel so that they can handle the run game. James Cook, Ray Davis may be out. I don't know if he got a full concussion or what.
Yeah.
I didn't catch the whole Buffalo game. I just got, you know, bits and pieces of it. And then Ty Johnson, he's such a weapon for them in the receiving game. You're going to have to watch out for him. I think he scored against Baltimore the first game. That might have been their only – I could be wrong about that. But he's definitely scored a number of times, including this playoff game for Buffalo. So Ty Johnson is one to look out for in the receiving game. But Baltimore is going to have to toe that line. Playing linebackers, I don't think you can go too light on them. But their running backs aren't necessarily powerful guys. I think you're more just talking about their offensive line, which is you know, a pretty darn good unit.
It's a good unit, but the Ravens are huge up front, and they use their size very effectively with Pierce and Jones to deny space. Urban is another guy who plays with very good leverage, and of course Matabike is a remarkable athlete, just muscle from head to toe. A tad undersized, but he's perfectly fine to go up against any guard one-on-one. This will be an interesting game. It'll be one where I don't expect the Ravens to play tons of base defense. I think, like you're saying, it'll be mostly nickel. I think one of the things the Ravens will have to figure out is how they don't get beat for some of the things that Kansas City and Buffalo have tried against the Ravens in the past. Lots of bunch formations. Don't want to see them get beat on that. They need to find a way on the fly or be prepared to combat as it occurs when either Kansas City or Buffalo throws that at them. And they will. Each of them may try. I mean, obviously they're not guaranteed to play Kansas City, but they will play Buffalo. And if they try and do a bunch of rubs off rubs and picks off bunch formation, that's kind of a staple. And the Ravens need to know how to deal with it. And that's involves usually some hard jams at the line of scrimmage. And we'll see if the Ravens prove adept at stopping it when they didn't get it done last time. But anyway, there's nothing about the Bills run game that really makes me worry the way the Broncos should have been worried about it. I think that the Bills will have a harder time running on the Ravens for two major reasons. Number one is that I don't think they can run really consistently against a bigger team like the Ravens. And second of all, I think the game script will not allow them to do it. So I don't expect the Ravens to be down 3 touchdowns. If they are, I don't expect it to be easy for the Bills to run the ball in that situation. But if the Ravens get ahead, the Bills won't be able to run the ball just because they won't be particularly effective at it, and they'll be really forced to pass and incented to pass. So I really don't see this as a game where Cook or anybody else or the combination of Allen and Cook rush for 200 yards, say, against the Ravens and flip the script on what's happened. I think the Ravens are just naturally quite well suited to defend the Bills' run game.
Yeah, and I think the key to Buffalo's run game is Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. They have James Cook. He's really good. I like him, you know, as a former Bulldog. I always said how good he was, and Buffalo fans, I don't think, really realized it. And maybe the team, the coaches didn't realize it until this year, but he's a talented running back. Josh Allen stirs that drink just like Lamar Jackson does here. But, you know, we have Derrick Henry, who was well established before Lamar, but certainly the duo together makes them special. Just like in Buffalo, Josh Allen's threat of running, breaking tackles, being that more physical style runner is what enables Buffalo to run the ball whenever they do.
All right. Great stuff, Jake. I'll let you have the last word on that. Let's go back to the MVPs for a second from this wild card game against the Steelers. Savor this for just a minute. Oh, the excitement's so tense. I can't even cut it. Who's your number three guy?
Broderick Washington, as you know. We already kind of hit on him. I thought he just played a really sound game in the run. I thought he rushed the passer pretty well. One of those plays – I don't know if it was so much him winning or if it was designed because it was a screen to Harris. But yeah, I think he had a good game.
Yeah, no complaints about how Washington played. 15 snaps. The Ravens weren't particularly great with him on the field, but they weren't particularly great with anybody on the field other than Michael Pierce. Michael Pierce had 8 snaps the whole game, and the Steelers averaged 2.3 yards per play on those snaps. And he's had another game like that this year. It's been remarkable, like how effective the Ravens defense has been with Pierce. It's got to kind of be irking Harbaugh to a certain degree, because I really don't get the sense that he's happy with Pierce's weight. I really get the impression that, you know, coming off of IR, he feels like he should have been in better shape than he is right now. And he's carrying around, you know, whatever extra is underneath that shirt now.
Yeah.
Okay. My number three guy is Marlon Humphrey. Tough choice. There were a lot of good candidates in this game, but Marlon Humphrey had a fine game in coverage as a pass rusher. Drew that big offensive pass interference on Pickens. He had a couple other incompletes he forced. Didn't have a greatest game as a tackler, but he did in generally was another great game from Marlon in what is a very well-deserved All-Pro season.
Absolutely agree with that. I went a little bit different. Sticking with the trenches here, I went with Adafe Owe as my number two. Thought he looked really good. Like we mentioned earlier, his athleticism and his football IQ has definitely grown, and his technique for sure. So Dr. Rush has been doing the Lord's work with some of these guys, and I was proud of the way OA played and contributed in this game.
He's been an outstanding player. He's my number one guy, actually. So I'll just tell you my number two guy, who might be your number one guy or maybe not. But my number two guy is Ardarius Washington. Great game, moving all over the field. I see you nodding. You probably got him at number one, that means. But so many big plays in this volume. Wasn't absolutely perfect. Obviously, he had a hand in the 36-yard touchdown. The fact that he dropped the pick doesn't really bother me. Much more important that he slid over and was in position to make that play. And I'm not at all bothered by the 25-yard big thumping hit. And then, of course, he set up both of the cowardly punts with stops just short of the stick by being a very aggressive tackler. And in each case, I thought there's no way in hell he's going to make this play. And he did.
Yeah, completely agree with that.
He was your number one guy?
Yeah, he was my number one. Everything that you said is, you know, spot on. He's been fantastic. The way he attacks ball carriers is second to none. For his size, he is like Mighty Mouse out there. He reminds me of Steve Smith as a defender. You know, he is just a ball of physicality, and it's really refreshing to see that in an unsung Ravens defender.
Yeah. All right. Always great talking football with you, Jake. Tell folks where they can find your work online or where they can talk football with you online, maybe more importantly.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter or X at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. I'm talking Ravens. I'm talking Georgia football, college football, and NFL in general. Definitely getting into all of the playoff talk. I've had my fair share of MVP conversations, which, you know, can get a little annoying, and they can be ongoing. But it's been a great season, and I love talking with fellow fans. So hit me up on there.
All right. Make sure you look at Jake and you watch for him on this pod for his draft analysis, which is just outstanding. So he'll I'm sure you do a position group again, Jake. I'm committing you to this as we go here, obviously. And he probably will be a panelist at some point during the draft to talk about it. If you haven't been on that show, really worthwhile. We've got a new format for it that we started last year that I think will continue. It's kind of a groupthink method to identify players that might be next up for the Ravens as we work through the draft. It's a fun process. The last draft video is still out there if you want to see how that works. But Jake was on for a good bit of the draft this last year, correct? Really appreciate having you, my friend. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. Please like and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube, and please show this podcast to a friend. We appreciate any traffic you can give us. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.